listening to the Charlie Polillo Show on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN 97.5.com.
Presented by Tri-Eagle Energy. Live from the ESPN 97.5 studios. Here's Charlie Polillo.
Olajuwon for three.
Somewhat a curious blend of MLB Network core music playing us in, and then Marv Albert's call of nearly 25 years ago, double clutch, the Rockets' second championship. Well, it's not as if that just happened by coincidence or accident. Ceremonial first pitch tonight, Hakeem to Clyde. I love that, whoever hatched the idea. And it bridges us into the conversation in this segment. Robert Flores of MLB Network and NHL Network when this baseball stuff is done. Native Houstonian, or as I noted in the show-starting tweet, Pasadenan. I don't want to step on toes. U of H, so a stout professional, but with some subdued rooting interest in the game tonight. Robert, appreciate the time. And, well, I guess you were a little removed from U of H. Were you running around Richmond Avenue that night in 95 when the Rockets won the second title? Where were you? Double clutch city.
Yeah, I was working in Waco at the time. So I was not, but I was definitely celebrating there in Waco back in 95 in 95. So it was quite remarkable, and you know, that was that those Clutch City teams were, you know, they were the first title teams in Houston, and they kind of got it started. And we'll see if these Astros can add to their title collection tonight.
Hakeem to Clyde, whoever hatched that, I just think it's great. And do you think there were negotiations on who would throw and who would catch?
Yeah, no, I would love to have heard how that all came about. But, you know, I think it's without a doubt, if he is, if you have a Mount Rushmore of great sports figures in the city, I think Hakeem is on there. I would put Earl Campbell on there, and I would put there's a case to be made for maybe Jose Altuve if he continues on this path. I don't know who that fourth person would be. Maybe is it Nolan Ryan or something like that? I mean, that's up for debate, but. But Jose Altuve is certainly trending in that direction.
And Hakeem Olajuwon, at this point, remains the intelligently indisputable number one. Related to that, rather important game tonight. If Verlander pitches and gets that zero in his World Series win column expunged, he can't win the MVP, right? Maybe if he throws a no-hitter, it would steal some votes. But he'd have won one game in a six-game series. George Springer has a chance. I mean, he's really right there, and have noted Koufax, Gibson, Reggie, the only two-time World Series winners. At this point, that seems to be pretty wide open. Gerrit Cole, one bad start, one brilliant start. There hasn't been one hitter who's taken over the series. That could well be decided tonight as well.
Yeah, absolutely. I think you could throw Michael Brantley in the mix if they if they close it out tonight, if he has a part in the victory tonight, which, by the way, it's no guarantee. Obviously, Steven Strasburg, I think, has been the best pitcher in all of baseball this postseason, and that includes Cole and Verlander. So it's not going to be easy. For a dark horse candidate, depending on what happens tonight, I mean, Will Harris, my goodness, what he has done out of the bullpen. I think he is the most trusted reliever. If you asked AJ Hinch out of their bullpen, I think it was important that he got 2 days off, winning in game five and them extending the score a little bit gave them some breathing room. So that gives Will Harris 2 days. So I think that's an important factor going into tonight as well.
If they win a 2-1 game and Will Harris gets 4 or 5 significant outs in relief, right, which could get him to 5 innings in the series, but critical innings, Yeah. I think you hit on the guy who would be the sleeper candidate. We're talking with Robert Flores, MLB Network. In a single game and in a series of games, there's really nothing that should truly shock in terms of winning and losing. But apart from the road team winning each of the five games, has there been anything about the series that really has surprised you much?
Well, the Scherzer injury threw everyone for a loop, and that's turning out to be very significant. It was significant in Game Five. If there is a Game Seven, if he can go, how long can he go? And if he does go, what does he bring the Nationals? I think that's something to keep an eye on. I think really the thing that surprised me was just how poorly the Astros were at the plate in those first two games, maybe game and a half, because they did score some runs, but just the inability there for them to convert with runners in scoring position. And that was something that was a theme even going back to the ALCS. I think that going back to that series against the Yankees, that this offense was doing some things uncharacteristic, which was chasing and not being as aggressive as you might think. Alex Bregman took a lot of first pitch strikes right down the middle. So I think going to DC, maybe things turned around a little bit, and hopefully for Astro fans that continues tonight.
And then you have the Nationals in their home ballpark go 1-for-21.
Yeah.
The three games with runners in scoring position, a batting average of 48, not 148, 48. So just a timely hit here or there to relieve some of the pressure, and they just never came up with one. Robert, when you look at the season-long numbers and 162 games, water finds its level, the Astros finished third in the American League in runs scored behind the Yankees and Twins.
Yep.
The Nationals were second in the National League in runs scored behind only the Dodgers. Obviously, the fundamental difference of the DH league in terms of total runs scored. But given that, Astros third in their league, Nationals second in their league. When you look at the lineups, doesn't it look like a mismatch, though, in the Astros' favor?
Yeah, I think just there's more depth in the Astros' lineup. They can go, you know, if you look at what Robinson Chirinos did during those games in D.C., that's out of the eight hole. So 1 through 7, known commodities with Correa there. And then Chirinos, if he starts hitting the ball out of the ballpark, that's just icing on the cake. And then you see Yordan Alvarez getting a start in left field and him going 3-for-3 before A.J. Hinch took him out. So there is more depth. I think the key for Verlander and the key really for the entire series, how do you manage 1 through 4 for the Washington Nationals? That's Turner, that's Eaton, that's Rendon, and that's Juan Soto. I think that how Verlander handles those four, how he handles them tonight, is going to be paramount to or going to be key to what ultimately happens. Because, yes, Zimmerman did go deep earlier in this series. Kendrick was an NLCS MVP. Robles can do some things, but it's that four for the Nats that I think scare Astro fans. And if you can find a way to get through that, I think that puts a lot of pressure on the bottom half of their lineup, which isn't as capable as the Astros.
Meshing right there, Robert, with the top of the first inning tonight. Verlander's been hammered in the first inning in a couple of his postseason. The last two, the four against the Yankees, and then the two runs in Game 2 against the Nats. You know, part of that is, all right, whether the pitcher hasn't settled in. Verlander, I don't think a mental block, but he's just struggled in the first inning. But along with that, and A.J. Hinch referenced this, hey, the first inning is when an offense should score the most runs. It's the only time it can absolutely dictate who's coming up when.
Yeah. No, that's a very good point. And listen, at this stage, when you're dealing with a lineup, as I mentioned, as talented as those first four, you don't want to just be grooving fastballs right down the middle. But at the same time, you can't have a four-pitch walk like he did in Game 2. That's just a recipe for bad things for Verlander and the Astros. Turner has elite speed. Adam Eaton can handle the bat extremely well. And so if Turner gets on and then Eaton is going to find a way to put him into second in scoring position with maybe no outs or one out, and then you got Rendon and Soto to deal with. So that's why Verlander has to find a way to keep Turner off the base path. That's something they, the Astros did in the games in D.C., and I think that's a reason why the Nats struggled so mightily offensively.
From an Astros perspective, if I offer you 7 innings, 3 runs from Verlander tonight, do you accept that, or you roll the dice that you get better?
I think you accept that. I think while Strasburg was very good in Game 2, the Astros made him work. I think he threw 116 pitches in 6 innings. They had traffic on the base paths a lot of those innings, scored 2 runs. I think that they can get to him even more tonight. Now, remember, the Nats bullpen, there's question marks there, certainly. And you have to wonder, how does Davey Martinez manage that? He needs Strasburg to go deep tonight. So if the Astros, once again, drive that pitch count, and Davey Martinez is left with few options, and those few options aren't great, then I think that favors the Astros.
2 years ago, when the Astros won the World Series, you did just a tremendous video essay, and this is where the Houston area guy got deserved dibs to do the piece in the aftermath of Harvey on top of the significance of the Astros winning the World Series. So I don't want to say it as pulling rank, but do you have the sequel in the works?
I'll take you a little kind of behind the curtain a little bit. I have written 2 essays, one for the Astros and one for the Nats. So, I mean, no matter which team wins, I think there's compelling stories for the Nats. You look at where they came from, how their season started, and also being 3 runs down in the 8th inning at home in the wild card game. So that's a compelling story. I think the angle for the Astros is that this Astro team, you know, there's been title teams in this city before. There's been good teams in this city before. But if they can close this out, I don't think that this city has ever had a team like this Astro team and like this organization where they were respected, feared, and maybe even a little bit polarizing. You know, similar to what maybe they could become what the Patriots are, a team that you love to hate, and maybe the only team, the only people that root for them are in that fan base. Maybe they could become what the Golden State Warriors were as of just recently. The foundation is there. Sure, more than likely they're going to lose Garrett Cole. But I think 2 titles in 3 years in an increasingly competitive environment, having to go through the Yankees as well, I think that this could be really something that the city of Houston hasn't had.
Mini dynasty certified if they win tonight or win tomorrow night. And look, they're beautiful diamonds, any championship. But this Astros team would be mentioned in the breath with the greatest single-season teams of all time. In contrast, the Rockets championship teams, as grand as they were, don't make those conversations in NBA circles. Hey, a couple of other quick things before I let you go, Robert. The baby shark thing, cute and fun or silly, if not flat-out stupid?
I think it's fun. I'm also I'm also on board with them with the Nats dancing at the dugout. I think anytime baseball players especially can show some personality, show fun, I'm all on board with it. Now I know Astro fans probably get a little tired of it, but I think it's fun. And I did see online Julia Morales, who is part of the Astros broadcast during the regular season, she did, I think, share a video of some Astro fans that were in D.C. that had a remix of Baby Shark. So that's also fun. So I'm on board with both.
It's a matter of opinion, but that's the right answer. And MLB's slogan is "Let's play loud." So if it's not taunting, come on, a little life, a little verve should be celebrated. And lastly, I don't know if you can compartmentalize, right? Purely as an MLB Network guy, you want a Game 7, right? The ultimate drama in the sport. But if the Astros are going to win the World Series tonight, as a fan, a stirring 5-4 heart in your throat type game or a 9-1 countdown of the big ball dropping on New Year's Eve over the last few innings?
Boy, that's tough, because I tell you what, being there when Altuve went yard off Chapman, when the seemingly the air had been sucked out of the building after DJ LeMahieu took Roberto Osuna deep. And then in that next half inning for Altuve to do that, the excitement, I haven't heard very often noise like that after Altuve went deep, and just the explosion of sound that crowd there at Minute Maid created. So that's a tough one. Maybe like you said, a stirring come from behind walk off win to clinch a World Series, similar to Joe Carter in 93. Maybe that's the way to go.
That's what I'm for. Or even the drama of securing the last three outs in the top of the ninth inning. Blowouts just aren't as exciting, and excitement's what we're in this for. Robert Flores of MLB Network and Houston Cougar, and go Shorthorns, is that right?
Joby Longhorns.
Longhorns, yeah. It's just a little joke on the Shorthorns thing. I get the UT types upset. Hey, much appreciate the time, the insight, and the fun with that. And I'm pretty sure it's YouTubeable, right? The transient population here. And those who might not have seen the essay from 2 years ago, if I just search Robert Flores, Astros 2017,
somewhere. We were really proud of that.
You should be.
I urge people to, like you said, go on Google and just search my name and Astros essay, and I'm sure it'll pop up.
Robert, thanks again. We'll see you at the ballpark.
Hey, you got it, Charlie. Have a good one.
All right.